Tonight I wanted to go back to the basics and just talk about mindfulness, really what is mindfulness, and give a more nuanced perspective on it and give you a sense of, there's a lot of different dimensions to mindfulness. I mean, it's easy to talk about mindfulness as paying attention in the present moment, and then there's lots of derivations of that definition, but it's a lot more than paying attention in the present moment. And there's, as I said, there's lots of nuances to how we pay attention, what we're paying attention to, what we're doing with our mind as we pay attention, what's happening with thoughts, how we relate to our thoughts, and what are some of the goals of mindfulness. So I thought I'd just, even though we talk about it in some ways every week, I thought I'd go back to the basics around this. So we think about, well, let's say, I'll just give you the definition I always use is paying attention to our present moment experiences with openness, curiosity, and a willingness to be with what is. So it's not being lost in the past or the future, which is what our minds tend to be doing, going back and forth into the past, into the future, replaying things that happened, feeling bad about them, ruminating, planning, obsessing, catastrophizing, worrying. But it's coming into this present moment here and now, which for the most part, not always, but for the most part is okay. The present moment usually is quite neutral. Sometimes it's not. But when it's not, through mindfulness, we gain greater capacity to tolerate the present moment when it's not okay or neutral. Sometimes we're in the present moment, but we're in the present moment wishing it were a different present moment, comparing it to another present moment. Comparing it to resisting the present moment, disliking the present moment. So there's a lot of time we can be present, but it's not with that quality of openness and curiosity. So those are really important characteristics of it, and also the sense of this willingness to be with things as they are. Willingness to be with what is. So again, it's about not resisting the present moment, bringing this open, curious, present time awareness with a willingness to be with things as they are. Now, mindfulness is used in a lot of different contexts, right? So mindfulness, people think of as a meditation practice. Mindfulness is a meditation practice. And if you think of meditation practices, there's hundreds of types of meditation practices. So if you think of sports, there's hundreds of sports, and then there's all these categories under sports. Meditation is a huge category, and then there's lots of different types of meditation underneath it, like what we're doing here, mindfulness, but also visualization meditation, mantra meditation, TM meditation, Tai Chi is a type of meditation. I mean, there's hundreds of types of meditation. So mindfulness is a meditation, but we also know it's more than just a meditation. It's cultivated through a meditation, but it's also a quality of attention that we can bring to any moment. So we can bring that quality of present time awareness to any point in our day, and we don't have to be meditating. And that's why we were talking about how do you bring it into our relationships with people. We can bring this curious, open, present time awareness to relating to another person. We can bring it to driving. We can bring it to brushing our teeth. We can bring it to walking. We can bring it to a moment of feeling anxious and needing just a little bit of sense of being more present. And so mindfulness can be a moment that we have at various points of the day. It can be a moment that we sustain through applying some effort. I'm going to be mindful as I walk from here to my car. I'm just going to feel my feet, and we can be applying effort. So it's moment after moment. But it doesn't have to be a formal meditation practice. It can just be this quality of attention. Now, sometimes mindfulness is considered to be, people will talk about it like, oh, I'm compassion is mindfulness, or patience is mindfulness, or forgiveness is mindfulness. And what I would say is all of these are outcomes connected to mindfulness. They aren't necessarily mindfulness itself. It's not that application of present time awareness. But when you do these practices over time, the outcome is these things I mentioned: patience, compassion, kindness. And so it's pretty amazing. And for those of you who've been practicing for some time, you really know the results of doing this practice. So sometimes people will kind of mush it all together and say, oh, I'm practicing being more loving, I'm really mindful, and you are, but it's really an outcome of the practice. You can think of that, it that way. Mindfulness can also be considered a state of being. So sometimes we can think about maybe people we've met or read about or people who live from this state of just great awareness and connection to themselves. And it's the state of being awake. And so mindfulness is also that. We can live with this quality of mindfulness. Now, for most people, we're not living in continuous mindful awareness. For more people, it comes and goes. But it's so lovely when we're kind of in the middle of our day and suddenly it's a state of being that just comes into us and we feel connected and grounded and compassionate and home in our bodies, just right here. So we can think of mindfulness that way. And then finally, you know, mindfulness is, obviously it's an English word that has its own history. So, you know, people often say be mindful of such and such, or in the subway in England, right, they say mind the gap, right? And, you know, they're encouraging mindfulness. I've also noticed mindfulness being used a lot in the context of living a mindful life, like living ecologically aware, living with awareness of your impact on the earth. People talk about it as this is mindfulness. So it's just another way of thinking about mindfulness. We can live a mindful life. We can use practices. We can use all the elements that I'm talking about. We can have a mindfulness meditation practice, mindful moments of attention, mindful outcome, compassion and things that arise. We can have more moments of this as the way of being, and then we're living a mindful life. So why is it so hard to be mindful? You know, it's really not hard to be mindful, right? If I were to say to you, everybody, 1, 2, 3, be mindful, you could do it in 1 second. You wouldn't even have to think about it. I'd say, all right, now, everybody, let's do it. Be mindful. Okay, did you do it? What I did when I said that was I noticed my feet on the floor. I just had an awareness, a bodily awareness, as a present time awareness, not past, not future, but right here, of the physical sensation. So it's a kind of embodied awareness that mindfulness can sometimes be that's really helpful. So it's easy to do. What's not easy is to remember to do it, okay?
Or to sustain it.
It's not easy to remember to do it, to sustain it. And it's also something that in some ways goes against the grain of this culture, right? Everything in the culture is about producing and doing and succeeding, and it's all about the future. And there's very little that's given to just be, right? We don't value just being. We value doing. So it's this kind of, it opposes the cultural forces, it feels like to me. And I don't think it's any coincidence that at this time in history, when things are getting so sped up and there's so many demands and so many responsibilities and people feel so disconnected, that there's so much popularity of mindfulness, right? Where people are coming to it because they need it. And so it goes against the grain of the culture. And it also is hard because for most of us, we're retraining a brain that for 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, and so on years has been taught to not be mindful. It's to be distracted. I mean, certainly we're taught to pay attention to a certain degree, but to have this quality of mindfulness, it's not a normal thing. We're taught to do everything but get distracted, get busy, get absorbed, you know, worry. We're taught to worry. Right, someone doesn't sit you down and say, okay, here's how you worry, right? That's actually it's fairly intuitive how to worry. We can figure it out right away. I don't know about brain biology and so forth, but what happens is we're taught to live not in the moment. is my point. And so we're going against what we've been taught, what we've done, what we've internalized for our lifetime when we start to pay attention mindfully. It's also interesting, I was talking to a scientist once who said to me that with our brain biology, our brain doesn't like to pay attention to things that it doesn't have to pay attention to. There's a conservation of energy, right? So if I'm asking you to pay attention to your breathing, your brain doesn't need to pay attention to your breathing. In fact, it's an automatic process that we probably generally wouldn't pay attention to. So there's something that's happening in the brain going, wait, why should I pay attention to this? I mean, obviously your brain doesn't work that way, but you know what I'm saying. So it seems to go against the grain of things. But it is good that it's hard. It's really good that it's hard because that's how we develop the capacity to be more mindful. So for instance, if you are going to the gym and you want to build your bicep, you're not going to use this as a weight, a piece of paper, right? It's going to take a really long time for me to build my bicep if I lift this piece of paper up and down and up and down. That's why I use a weight that's heavy that tires out my mind over time. I mean, my bicep. Thank you. The same with the mindfulness. Your mind, essentially, you can think of the resistance as your mind wandering away from the present moment. And then you kind of have to bring it back, and then it wanders away, and then you bring it back. And this, with this resistance, over time, the mind gains more and more capacity. And as they talk about it, new neural pathways develop, right? Our brain, there's neuroplasticity, which is the brain's capacity to change over time. It happens as you keep working at it. And so sometimes when I give a lecture or a PowerPoint about mindfulness, I have this picture of a brain working out. And it's kind of strange, but it's this brain, and he has his biceps, and he's working out, because every time you come back to the present moment, essentially you're working out your brain. And if you have ADD, you have lots of opportunity, you have more opportunity than most people to work it out, right? You can just keep it's harder. Okay, so another reason it's hard to be mindful is because our thoughts are so compelling. Our thoughts are so interesting and they seem so darn real. And of course they are real. They're our thoughts, right? But we believe our thoughts, and the believing of our thoughts leads to a lot of suffering. So of course many of our thoughts are very useful thoughts. The thought that said, I better get up in this morning and go to my job, that's a good thing, or go to school, or the thought, they're like incredible thoughts. Somebody had the thought, I want to build a public university and make education available to all these people in California. And here we have UCLA, however many years later. Anyone know how old it is? No idea. What? 1919, okay. So basically almost 100 years ago, somebody had that thought, and here we are with the results of that and all the hundreds of thousands of people who've received an education from it. So thoughts are not inherently bad things, and in fact can be incredibly productive and useful and wonderful things, but there are lots of thoughts that lead to suffering. And because these thoughts lead to suffering, they're often the thoughts that take us by surprise. They grab us, and we're lost in this thought, and we suffer. And they're usually certain types of thoughts do that. Anxious thoughts, depressed thoughts, comparing thoughts, self-judging thoughts. You know, there's for most of us, there's a kind of thought that really drives us crazy. And I've probably given this analogy many times, but I'll do it again, that it's kind of like our thoughts are like trains. There's a train, we have one thought, it leads to the next, it leads to the next, and the train just goes down from the station, down the track, 20 miles down, and suddenly you go, oh, gosh, I was lost in that thought. This can happen when you're meditating. You just have a thought, and you have more thoughts. It's like a snowball. It just picks up steam. It gets bigger and bigger and bigger. I just used three different analogies in one sentence. But anyway, finally, you recognize that you're lost. You are on the train. And then you go, oh, wow, I'm really lost in that thought. And then you get off the train. Or you have the option of never getting on the train in the first place. You can stay at the station and let the train go. Because you don't have to believe your thoughts. You don't have to be so caught in the grip of your thinking. And it's kind of amazing, these moments when this happens, and we refer to this as disidentification. Disidentification means not taking anything so personally. Our thoughts, our emotions, our beliefs about ourselves, our worries, our fears. When we can step back and say, huh, that's just a thought moving through me or an emotion moving through me. It's not me. It's just, oh, isn't that interesting? Wow. I'm really worried about that, or I'm really upset about that. Huh, how interesting, as opposed to, I'm really worried about this, it's horrible, I'm so upset. See the difference? Being lost in the grip of something and having a little bit of freedom. So mindfulness, it's so hard because we so frequently believe our thoughts, and we're lost in our thoughts most of the time, which is one of the main ways we get pulled out of just living in the present. It's those pesky thoughts, right? They just convince you that something else is really, really important, like, you know, I don't know, that worry you have to worry about. You have to worry about it for the next 10 hours. You have to worry about it. So with mindfulness, we learn to let go. We learn to live more in the present moment, not be so taken by these thoughts. And this is, by the way, one of the biggest misconceptions I've had about meditation from, I get it all the time, is people think that you're supposed to stop thinking. That you're supposed to sit down and meditate and you're getting to this blissful state and your mind is going to go blank and you're in deep peace. And so just curious, how many people does that happen to when you meditate? Occasionally, maybe something, maybe once or twice. It's typically not what happens to people. What happens to people when you meditate is you get to see the nature of your mind doing all the things, judging, comparing, complaining, spacing out, worrying. Anyway, you know what your mind does. When our minds can get quiet, we can feel more peaceful, we can feel more ease, but it's certainly not about stopping your mind from thinking. We learn to work with our thoughts. We learn to say, wow, I'm really caught in that thought. I'm going to unhook and let go and come back into the present moment. And we do it again and again. Excuse me. We do it hundreds of times in one meditation sitting. Yeah.
This sounds like a dumb question, but I've been wondering, and now I'm going to ask. You concentrate on your breath, and I can do that. Is that the goal, is to concentrate on the breath? And what else is supposed to happen?
Okay, this is not a dumb question. It's a really important question. The question is, so you concentrate on your breath, and basically, is that it? What else is supposed to happen? The concentrating that we do on our breath is very specific. There's a specific reason. Most of our minds are all over the place, and this allows us to gather, focus, concentrate our mind, and gain some stability. But it's not the final stopping point. It's in fact, if we did that, we would be doing a meditation just to develop concentration. Instead, what it is it gives us kind of a foothold to be able to see clearly what's happening in our mind. So we begin, you've probably had the experience, you notice your breath, but then a sound comes by, you notice that, you notice a thought that happens, you notice your body and mind, all sorts of things happening. So what mindfulness does is it gives us a capacity to be aware of and be present to everything that's happening in life. So the breath meditation is a tool that allows us to open to the full experience of things. And as you meditate, you'll find that you'll have times in your meditation where you might just be noticing thoughts coming and going. Isn't that interesting? And you get to see how impermanent thoughts are as they move through us. Or you notice that there's a body sensation. You notice your reactivity and how much you hate it. But you soften and you settle and you notice that it comes and goes and that everything is coming and going. So it's a tremendous learning that happens as we meditate, and that the breath meditation, which I normally teach us to start off with, is what gives us that capacity to see more fully into our experience. But you're making me think that I'll give more instructions about including other things as we practice in the coming weeks, okay? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One more question.
Sure, another question.
So, one thing. So when you're studying, now mindfulness is study, I'm trying to reconcile. Because that some people, like their whole life, their job is to focus on some concepts. Say, and an example would be if you're studying for an exam. Now, how do you mindfully... Because as soon as you distract your thinking, because that's an observation where your mind wanders, right? Mm-hmm. As soon as your mind wanders, you can't absorb what was read. You know, so I'm trying to reconcile where does mindfulness play in the concept of concentration or of meditation in terms of thought or reading or research or, you know.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, so this is really another really important question. When you're doing, our mind has different functions, right? And so the function of learning, and especially like the intellectual learning or cognitive knowing, we can call it that, where you need to apply a certain kind of attention in order to retain information and memorize things and, you know, all of the things we do when we study. That's a very specific function that we don't want to interfere with too much, okay? Now, the way that mindfulness could be useful to it. So in other words, I wouldn't say to you, apply your mindfulness in every moment while you're studying. I would just say, do whatever you're doing, because you got to study. But the way it could be useful, and I'll give you an example, was that was if you get distracted, and if you're not mindful, you won't even know that you're distracted, and then 15 minutes could pass, and you may have been thinking about, you know, the baseball game or something. But if you're mindful, you could go, oh, I'm aware, now I'll bring my attention back to the studying. So you're not bringing it back to a meditation or anything. You're bringing it back to what you're doing. And this was done, they did a research study with college students taking, studying for the GREs. And they were studying for the verbal portion, and what they had them do, I'm sorry, the reading comprehension part, was they learned mindfulness as a tool to help them when their mind wandered to come back. And they got a 16 percentile point increase compared to the control group. So it can be very helpful around that type of activity I'm describing, but I wouldn't say sit there and be mindful every second, you know, while you're studying. It wouldn't make any sense. Or like if I'm reading a novel, I'm not sitting there trying to be mindful, right? I'm reading the novel. Or if I'm watching a movie, I'm not saying, Diana, be mindful of your body. It would take away from the experience. I'm enjoying the movie. Now, if let's say I'm enjoying the movie and suddenly I start stressing out about something that happens tomorrow, I might then pop in mindfulness and go, Diana, you're worrying. Okay, notice your body, take a breath, let's enjoy the movie. You see how it's like the skillful application of it?
It sounds like there's an emotion, it has something to do with emotional brain, like impacting your present experience. Something like emotional hijacking, I guess. You're saying it would help him take
birth?
I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. You're asking really clear questions, and I think it can help with emotional regulation, if maybe that's what you're pointing to right now. It can help with mind wandering. It can help with anything where you need to be more present. Mindfulness can help us. But in the act of doing something, it may require a different faculty of the mind. You know what I'm saying? So just like we were talking about with studying or reading a novel or watching a movie or whatever it is. So, these nuances are really, there's a lot in here when you begin to dig into what mindfulness is. And I think when we're relating to other people, mindfulness, when employed in a very kind of, I don't know, stealth maybe is the word, but also just a very relaxed way can be really helpful. So when we're connecting with a person and we're just settled back and we're present and we're really giving full attention, but we're not like meditating, you know what I'm saying? It's just a kind of that quality of being that we can bring into our relationships that can improve the relationship. So mindfulness has different levels and ways of doing it.
Maybe another way that a mindfulness practice can help somebody like study is that you're also more aware of self-sabotaging thoughts that you might not otherwise be aware of. So you might say to yourself, okay, I hate biology, so bad at biology. And then well, let me sit down and study biology. Can be very self-sabotaging. But if you're aware that you are
yeah, that's a great example of a skillful use of mindfulness to help us with something that we need to do. That we can recognize self-sabotaging thoughts you're pointing out, self-judgment, self-criticism, and you see them just as thoughts. You don't get on the train, or you get off the train, and then you go back to what you need to be doing. So there's lots of uses for mindfulness. I'm sure that people can come up with many, many more of them as we keep going. So this is what I was talking, we were talking when you were asking the question that about where's an end point or where are we heading? It's this diligent application of moment after moment in the meditation practice. Moment after moment awareness, which we start with something simple like our breath or the sound, and then we begin to include all of the experience of life, our body sensations, our thoughts, our emotions. The sounds can get included if we weren't using that as our main focus. Mental states, moods, everything becomes part of the experience. And in that way, we're cultivating the capacity to be present with whatever life brings. And this is an amazing quality that we can develop through mindfulness, that it teaches us that we can sit here, we can sit on in our meditation posture, and we could have some really intense physical pain or emotional pain, and we can know deep down that we can be okay in the midst of it because we have mindfulness. Right? When I'm feeling, if I'm feeling sad, sometimes I'm feeling sad and I meditate, and maybe even I don't even want to meditate to start because I just feel there's a lot of feelings inside me. But if I give myself space and I just let myself feel it, there's so much, it allows the emotion to move through me. It takes away the intensity of it, like there's something wrong or there's a problem. And I learned to just be with things. And as I said, it's a sense of kind of passing through me instead of being lost in the grip of something and it's a big problem. So mindfulness can be used in so many different ways to help us include all of life in our experience. Sometimes mindfulness is very, very narrow and in the sense of what we're observing is just the minute details of our breath. Or the minute details of our walking, of our feet as we're walking. And so that's when we use the really focused attention. But sometimes mindfulness can be really, really wide, wide open. So when we do the sound meditation and we listen to the sounds coming and going, it's a wide open meditation. And neither is better. And you're not supposed to be doing one or the other. It just really depends on what's working for you in the moment. Although the focused attention often gives us more capacity to have the open attention. Now, the thing about it is it can be useful. Different ones are useful at different times. So my friend was teaching her 16-year-old to drive. And her daughter was really, really good at focused attention, but was not really good at kind of peripheral attention. So she's driving, and she would somehow be missing things to the right and to the left, but she was really focused, and she practically hit the mailbox because she was too focused, right? So you want to be able to appropriately use the different types of awareness. If you're in a meeting and your mind is really, really scattered, and you know you need to be focusing on what's happening, it's really helpful to just take a few breaths and keep coming back into something really that focuses you, Right? But there might be another time when your mind is feeling really tight and tense and just relaxing and opening to the sounds and the sights. And just having a greater spacious awareness is an appropriate thing to do. Or if you're going for a hike, for instance. Some people try walking meditation when they're hiking and they're trying to be so focused on their feet that they miss everything. They miss the beauty, they miss the birds, they miss the sight, they miss the sound. But you can walk really mindfully and notice everything. You're still doing mindfulness, even if you're not noticing your breath or your feet. So let me know if I'm starting to confuse you by all the things I'm saying. Maybe a few more points and then we'll try an exercise of some sort. Another key piece of mindfulness is the quality that we bring to the mindfulness. That we bring a kind of kindness embedded in the mindfulness itself. And so we were talking about self-sabotaging voices. So many of us have that, and we bring that even to our meditation practice. Get back to the breath! You know, does that sound familiar? And so it's really important that the quality of kindness, some people call it non-judgmental awareness. I don't love the idea non-judgmental awareness because oftentimes we judge ourselves and then we judge ourselves for judging ourselves if we think we're supposed to have non-judgmental awareness. You know what I'm saying? But compassionate awareness, kind awareness, I use the language willingness to be with what is. How can we bring that quality of kindness to every moment of our meditation? Some people give the example of when you're training a dog paper training a dog, right? A little puppy, a new puppy. You bring your new puppy home and you want your puppy to pee on the paper. You don't start screaming at your puppy, get over there, get on the paper now, right? That would be terrible to do that to your puppy. But on the other hand, you don't let the puppy run around the house peeing everywhere. So our minds is the same idea. When we're working with mindfulness, we're not going to give it free rein and let our mind go, you know, I'll just sit here and obsess about that person for the next half an hour. Oh, ding, the bell rang. What a great meditation. We don't do that. But on the other hand, we don't yell at ourselves and go, get back to the breath. You know, I sometimes call that traffic cop meditation. When you're really mean to yourself in your mind, get back to the breath. Right, so it's just this gentle, kind, compassionate approach to ourselves, but not so gentle that we give ourselves free rein and we don't take it seriously in a sense. So you can even listen to yourself when you're meditating. Like, what is the quality? What are the voices I'm saying to myself as I meditate? Am I saying thinking, or am I saying thinking? You know what I mean? When your mind wanders, I say you can say thinking or wandering. Do you say wandering, I'm a failure? Or do you say, oh, wandering? You can start to notice these aspects of the meditation. Because the more you cultivate that capacity to be kind to yourself as you meditate, guess what? It transfers out into life. And then you have more of capacity to be loving when you're in your life. And I've seen it. So many people, that the more they develop that as they meditate, the better they are with themselves. All right, there's many more things I could say about mindfulness. Since I've been talking about it for 20 years, I guess I have a few things to say. But maybe what we'll do now, just see if there are any more questions, we'll stop here and then we'll try a little mindfulness exercise. Any more questions about... Mm-hmm. So emotional regulation and mindfulness. I think that mindfulness is one of the most helpful tools for dealing with difficult emotions, really. I mean, just hands down. Because it teaches us not to repress the emotions and not to go crazy with our emotions expressing them, but to find that place where we can be aware of them and just notice that they're moving through us, but not take them so personally, not get so identified. So if we think of our emotions kind of like weather patterns moving through our bodies and minds, just like weather is moving through the atmosphere, it passes. So mindfulness can really teach us that. When we have a difficult emotion, what is very helpful is to feel in our body what's happening in that moment. So I'm feeling nervous. My heart is racing and my hands are clenched and my jaw is clenched and my face is red. Oh, okay. So what that does when we begin to notice it in our body is it gives us a little space from being caught in the emotion. And then we can regulate ourselves, right? We can, usually when we're in an emotion, we're just in the emotion. But with mindfulness, we can become aware of our emotion, feel it in our body, and then make choices out of that regulation. So that's a short, I probably could have talked an hour on an answer to your question, but maybe I talked too much. Okay, so we'll stop here, and maybe in a little while we'll pick up on a few more points about mindfulness.